The Tom Woods Show, episode 2329.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, believing that the end of the world might be a bad thing that we should try to avoid is not a Russian talking point. But if we are going to avoid World War III, it's important for Americans to understand what's been left out of the CIA's narrative about Russia and Ukraine. Coming to the rescue here is my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Ukraine. Pick it up at wrongaboutukraine.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, the heroic Ian Miller is with us today. Ian is the author of a book we talked about in the past called Unmasked, and he did a tremendous job over the past few years with his charts that I borrowed from, but attributed to him quite liberally, showing us that everything they said was going to work didn't work, that the opposite kept happening. But since you have a compliant media that won't bother calling anybody on it, I would say tens of millions of Americans still to this day aren't aware that none of the things they recommended work. Well, we're going to talk today about his brand new book, brand new as in released this very day, Tuesday, May, whatever the heck the date is, 2023, called Illusion of Control, COVID-19, and the Collapse of Expertise. Welcome back, Ian.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. That's a very kind introduction. Appreciate it.
Well, man, did you earn it? I mean, you did this entirely as a service to your fellow man. And in a normal society, there would be an Ian Miller Day or something, you know, some kind of parade or something like that in your honor. But instead, because of the screwed up society we in fact have, instead, you have to be consoled with being a guest on the Tom Woods Show.
Well, it's a huge honor. And obviously, you did an incredible amount of work in helping to kind of spread the message of the absurdity of all these restrictions and mandates. And the brilliant idea with the quiz, which was just genius to show, you know, if you can't, here's the curves, tell me where the mandates happened, tell me which one had the mandate. And you can't tell ever because none of it ever mattered. And that was a brilliant idea. And perfectly executed.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm reasonably certain we used some of your charts for that. You're talking about covidchartsquiz.com. I got the idea for that really from Catherine Hewig in, is she in Ohio or Illinois? I'm so bad. I think Ohio. But she went in front of the state legislature and she was holding up a chart and the timeline was deliberately omitted. And so she told them they had to fill it in. You tell me where Thanksgiving is on this chart, because remember how that's supposed to be devastating? And you tell me where the mask mandate went into effect, because remember that's supposed to really do a lot of good? Show me. Here's the line. Here's the graph. You tell me which is which, like what goes where in terms of labels on this chart. And of course, nobody could. It's impossible because the results are entirely random. And I thought, okay, this needs to go beyond just one state legislature. Everybody needs to see this. So I appreciate your acknowledgement of that. On the mask front, given that we did do that episode, I don't mind if it comes up, but there's so much more to talk about now in your new book that maybe we ought to do that. And I think I'm going to jump around a little bit in terms of the organization of your book. You have plenty of your charts in here, so I'm glad you are continuing to be able to make use of those. But you've got, I went through and picked out a bunch of things, and now I don't know which one to start with. So let's say you are introducing this book and you're making an elevator pitch to the average American who, you know, maybe thinks it was a lot of inconvenience, but well, I guess we just had to do it. Where would you begin with that person if you have like a minute?
Right. That's a great question. I think that I would try to say that it's a comprehensive case against everything that they did and all the measures that they tried and the passports and the mandates and the amount of information that they were giving to the public that was just blatantly incorrect, that was never acknowledged. And also how they kind of launder that information through the media, where you have the media kind of promoting these measures, promoting mandates and lockdowns. One of the examples is Germany, where you have The Atlantic writing this article saying Germany is doing so much better than the United States because of vaccine passports and high quality masking. And then Germany goes far past the United States in terms of COVID cases and other metrics within just a couple of weeks afterwards. So the pitch would be, it's a comprehensive case against all of these measures and how the experts kind of used media partners to spread their message to people and to encourage compliance with things that didn't work. And then they never acknowledged it after they got it wrong.
And the thing is, after they got it wrong, sometimes every once in a while, they would admit that it was wrong, but well, we couldn't have known that at the time, and like whatever. They've, occasionally, when they do admit it, we'll get some kind of excuse. But what would often happen is we would all kind of realize that something had been wrong, and yet you would still be penalized on, let's say, YouTube for pointing it out, even though everybody now knows it. Now, my understanding is I do believe they have modified it so that you can be critical of masks now. But what kind of a society is this that I'm not even sure what I'm allowed to criticize now? Even with the whole thing over, I'm still not sure if even in retrospect, I can say this was a good idea, this was a bad idea, this was ineffective, this didn't work. I don't even know. That's crazy.
Exactly. And I think that's another very important point to bring up is that there's this kind of homogenous blob of groupthink where experts kind of set the rules of what we're allowed to talk about. Social media companies enforce those rules based off of fact checks and things like that that are often entirely incorrect. And it creates this like false consensus where people are not allowed to even discuss the possibility that these policies aren't working, even though we can all see it in front of our face. And that was kind of the point with both of the books, really, is to show we all knew this. This was happening in real time. We could see it wasn't working and they just wouldn't let up. And it's a really dangerous precedent to set that experts who are wrong about everything, even if, and to be fair, even if they were right, it shouldn't be okay, but they were wrong about all of this and they were still allowed to kind of censor discussion, censor debate. Fauci out there saying, I am the science. The New Zealand Prime Minister saying, we are your sole source of truth and information. Now, that's an incredibly dangerous precedent to set for any issue, but especially for one when we can all see that they're lying right in front of our faces. We have the data, we have the evidence, and especially considering that they had the evidence pre-COVID to suggest a lot of this stuff wouldn't work. Now, this isn't new. There were pandemic planning scenarios and documents created just for this exact scenario, and they completely ignored it all. They panicked, they threw all of it out, got it wrong, and then never had to acknowledge it. And I think it's really important that we keep hammering that point home to ensure that this never happens again. And thankfully, a lot of these restrictions have ended, but that's the next frontier, is make sure this never happens again.
Yeah. And part of that job involves showing that it didn't do any good in the first place. And sometimes when I make that argument, I get people who are very, very hardcore against all this stuff saying to me, look, it doesn't matter. They didn't intend it to, quote, work. They intended it as a control measure. They intended it to set precedents for future control of us. And then I get told about the people who are really running the world and stuff like that. Now, maybe that's all true. But my point is, the average American thinks these things were done for his own good. And we have to talk to that average American. And step one, now maybe there are 12 other steps that person needs to take in order to be fully informed about just how sinister these people are. But step one has to be, it just didn't work, right? I think that has to be step one. Didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's definitely good arguments to be made that that could be a significant possibility. And I think that there are, I always say it's kind of a combination of things where you have groups of people, and especially like the CDC and the governor of California out there saying, we're going to use this to change how we govern society. And we want to rethink how we govern society. And you have the CDC when the vaccine comes out and they're saying this is 100% effective and no one that gets it will get sick and no one that gets it will die. And instead of prioritizing elderly people who everybody knows are at the highest risk, they say we're going to target distribution based off of equity and things like teachers unions and racial and other breakdowns. I mean, that's insane. And that shows you that they did kind of view this as an opportunity to rethink and reshape how they want to run the country and how they want to run these jurisdictions. And that's dangerous. But it's also, I think part of it is just, it's incompetence, it's hubris, it's arrogance, and it's groupthink where they don't have anybody in their lives that questions what they think. And you see that when some of these outside groups like the Great Barrington Declaration, people like us, when we did question it, and now we have these emails that have come out later, that they see it. And instead of engaging with the arguments or saying, you know, maybe we should rethink this, their first instinct is we got to censor, we got to control, we got to stop what people see. We don't want them being able to make decisions for themselves. That's not okay to me. It, like we said, the first step is showing that they were wrong. They did get this stuff wrong and they never really admitted it.
You have a chapter on Fauci. Now let's talk about the extent to which we can say that certain statements by Fauci were, well, here's the thing. I mean, I think some people might say nobody can know everything and the situation was very much in flux. And if Fauci in retrospect turns out to have been wrong about some things, well, who wasn't wrong about some things? So you're holding him up to an unreasonable standard. How would we respond to that? That are there times when he's making statements that either I can't prove he knows them to be false, but they clearly are false I mean, like if you really knew the whole sweep of the data, you would never make these statements.
It is tough. And obviously, that's a very fair criticism to say, look, not everybody's going to get everything right. I'm sure I've gotten many things wrong. You know, we all have. And that's totally fair. The issue I have with him is that there's this level of certainty that's completely unwarranted in a lot of his statements, where there's not this, like, we think this might help, or we think that this is a good thing to do. It's, this is not going to work, or this is going to work. And there's a lot of quotes like that. I mean, early on in the pandemic, it was criticizing Florida for reopening, saying this is not going to work. Well, you don't know that. Nobody knows that. And so I think that's a lot of the problem, is that he kind of created this false sense of infallibility. And especially, you know, it could be a media problem, that the media kind of globbed onto him as the anti-Trump and as the voice of truth and reason, and took everything that he said as unassailable. That was what was going to happen. So his words were kind of given undue weight, partially through his own fault and partially through the media's fault. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, what's really concerning is he didn't change course. After a lot of his pronouncements were proven wrong, everybody could see it. He didn't go back and say, yeah, okay, this was wrong, and maybe I'll withdraw a little bit and not be as certain about everything that I tell the public. But he didn't do that. There's never an acknowledgement of, hey, I made a mistake. Hey, I got this wrong. Yeah, I was working with the best data I had at the time, didn't get everything right. So it's one thing to be saying, yeah, okay, not everybody can be perfect. It's another to say, well, yeah, you can't be perfect, but at least tell the truth later on, at least admit it and say, we got this wrong and we'll do better, or apologize for the people that had their lives changed by all these mandates that you promoted.
Well, there are a couple things that occur to me right away. I mean, we could even leave out the school issue and just talk about two things. One would be when there was the Texas reopening, I pounced on this one. They asked him, I mean, he actually every once in a while would get a challenging question. Well, what do you think about the fact that Texas has reopened and there doesn't seem to be any big problem? There aren't big piles of corpses everywhere. So what do you think's going on? And his answer was, maybe they're doing everything outdoors. I mean, I'm not kidding you. Like, that was the best he could come up with. And I've said before, sometimes you think in the back of your head, well, these people are not dummies. I mean, maybe they do have some explanation that, you know, somewhere in their heads that I just don't know about. And then you hear Fauci give that answer and you think, nope, they're as out of it as I thought they were. And then the other one is when he claimed, and I think these were his words, or these might be Rachel Maddow's words, but the fact that I can't distinguish between them is very telling. But something along the lines of, when the shots were first being promoted, he was saying that you become a dead end for the virus if you get the shots. He couldn't possibly have known that, because nobody knew that, because they weren't even testing for that. So how do we characterize that kind of statement?
Right, exactly. It kind of goes back to what I was saying about that, like, unjustified certainty and infallibility that he kind of created around himself, where, you know, yeah, exactly, they didn't know. Nobody knew. And later on, you have Pfizer executives admitting in public, yeah, we didn't test for this. We had no idea. It was open. Everybody knew it. The CDC and Fauci just kind of jumped on this bandwagon early on, as soon as those were rolled out, that, oh, this is better than we even could have possibly imagined. And turns out, it wasn't anywhere close to that. And obviously, there's no efficacy whatsoever in reducing infection and transmission. But exactly what you brought up with the Texas comment, I think there was just this kind of like assumption that whatever they said was true and accurate because they said it, not because it was backed up by data. And that's, I think it's been one of the biggest problems throughout COVID, was that they were making these pronouncements without evidence to back it up. But it gets immediately proliferated through the media. And then these politicians that were looking to Fauci for guidance on every issue, especially in blue states, took that as, okay, well, vaccinated people are dead ends with the virus, got to have vaccine passports, got to have vaccine mandates, got to mandate it for school kids. And you have these insane pronouncements like Gavin Newsom later on, and he says, oh, we have all these other vaccine mandates for school kids, why not COVID too? Well, there's a big difference between the smallpox vaccine and the COVID vaccine. And I think that it kind of, that spirals out of control. And there's a political part of it too, where Fauci goes, I don't want to hurt the side that's been with me the whole time. I can't go back and now say, oh, I got this wrong and you look like an idiot because you listened to me. Like we said, it's some combination of incompetence, of arrogance, of hubris, and a lack of humility after things are proven wrong. It's really concerning and damaging, I think, to public health's reputation.
You've got some charts dealing with places that instituted these so-called vaccine passports and places that did not. And when you put them side by side, what emerges?
It's a lot of the same pattern as with mask mandates, where there's no difference. There's no impact whatsoever. And I think that that's very important to continue to make that case that none of this stuff mattered, none of it worked, because there's so many people that still think it was justifiable and think it was a reasonable decision to make by these politicians. And even if they had been right, this would not have been acceptable. But they were completely wrong, just like they were wrong about masks, and just wrong about school closures and lockdowns. One of the good examples is the New York City area, because New York City had these very strict vaccine passports and they were very proud of it. It's the key to New York. And there's a big long list of things that you were restricted from doing. And you can compare New York to neighboring counties in New Jersey or surrounding area around New York City. And there's absolutely no difference. In some cases, New York City had a significantly higher rate of infection. So again, if there was any efficacy whatsoever to these policies, that would not be possible, would not be happening. And if we could do the same thing as we did with yours, where you do these quizzes of show which one had the vaccine passport, which one didn't. And there's no difference whatsoever to these in the same region. And you could say, oh, well, New York City is more dense or whatever, but it doesn't hold up because their numbers are very similar to the other counties before the vaccine passports come into effect. So if there was density or other factors in changing that, that wouldn't be happening. It would be New York would be higher than surrounding areas regardless, but it's not the case because it was completely and utterly ineffective.
The purpose of these vaccine passport systems, of course, was put forth as a public health measure that you'll be safe because unvaccinated people who might make you sick won't be able to be sitting next to you in a restaurant. And this will give people more confidence to go out to eat and all that. That was the publicly stated purpose. But then I actually wrote about in my newsletter a couple of Canadian officials, and I see no reason to think that they're any different from American ones, who kind of let it slip that the real purpose wasn't so much that as it was to pressure people socially into getting vaccinated by more or less ruining their lives if they didn't. Well, that nobody quite put it that way in public. Public health officials made it clear this was all just for your good health-wise. But I don't think it's at all a stretch to say that the real purpose was just to more or less coerce people into doing it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The coercion aspect of it is dangerous and infuriating. And if you go back and look at like Public Health 101, everything that you would read would say, you don't get people to do what you want by coercion. That's the absolute wrong thing to do. That's exactly what they did. And again, if the product that they were pushing so hard was as effective as they were claiming, they wouldn't need to coerce people to get it. You know, if it really was that effective and really was that 100% or 95% like they were claiming, they wouldn't have to be telling people, we're going to ruin your lives and stop your ability to earn a living if you don't listen to our advice. But it wasn't. They were wrong. And so they had to kind of resort to these measures because people weren't doing exactly what they wanted. But the really crazy part too is if you look at other countries where they did have this incredible level of vaccine uptake, like the United Kingdom or New Zealand or Australia, they have huge surges of infections and hospitalizations and deaths after they get to 95% of the public vaccinated, which is what they all wanted. But they ignored that too. And I think that's another part of it that's concerning is there's all these other examples of countries that did do what they wanted, even with the coercion, without the coercion, and it still wasn't effective. But the fact that they had to resort to that, which is really inexcusable, I think is going to really hurt them down the line to get people to follow their recommendations. Because now a lot of people are going to question, oh, do they actually believe this? Or am I just being told this because that's what they want me to do? And that's the opposite of what you would want from public health.
You have a chapter in the book on Sweden. And then earlier in the book, you spend a little time on Japan. And I want to link those two for a minute because the discussion about them is more similar than you think. Because with Japan, we were told Japan's not doing enough. It's going to be a bloodbath there. They're going to get what they deserve. I mean, it was just ghoulish and the kind of ghoulish rhetoric that just became just the order of the day for these people. And then Japan actually ended up getting by all right. And so then we got, oh, the reason they got by all right was that they were wearing masks. Okay, well, you know what? That doesn't work because if they are wearing masks, you knew that at the time you were saying they were all going to die. So you can't now use that as the explanation that they're doing fine. So then they had that explanation. And they said, that's why. And then Japan got these enormous spikes in cases, despite the masks. So then they had to come up with something else. So they begin with the premise that, like a religious premise, that these public health measures work. That's the premise that requires no proof. And then we have to go interpret reality on that basis, which means we're constantly jumping around giving explanations for why reality doesn't correspond to what we expected to. Well, with Sweden, again, we were told, they're not locking down. It's going to be a disaster. They're going to have 96,000 deaths by June and all that. So, well, then they didn't. They had 4,000 deaths by June. So they were off by a factor of 24. So then it became, well, you know what the reason was? They voluntarily adopted some of these measures. Just it wasn't state imposed, but they all just voluntarily. But again, you, if that's true, then that was something you knew at the time you claimed they were all going to die.
Yeah.
So you can't now say, now we know what the explanation was. And by the way, you can look at photographs of people in Stockholm from May, June, July, August 2020, and come to your own conclusion as to whether they were voluntarily social distancing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that that's another really key point, is that they always have been trying to fit the explanation post hoc to explain why their initial prediction was completely off. And that leads to these kind of really embarrassing quotes and mistakes. And I bring up a lot of them in the book, and we've all done it in the kind of skeptical community about COVID on policies on Twitter, is you just bring up all these statements that were completely proven wrong. And there's a lot of experts that were promoted by Twitter, for example, somebody like Eric Feigl-Ding, who was saying, this country, Hong Kong or Japan, is going to do great because they're all wearing masks. And then 2 weeks later, they've broken every record that we've ever seen anywhere on Earth. And it's just complete silence. Or, they didn't get enough people vaccinated this time, and that's why it's doing this. And there's always just kind of that next explanation to try to justify why their initial prediction was wrong, but it doesn't hold up to any scrutiny. And I think there's a lot of, Sweden is a great example, Japan's a great example of what they said would work being the exact opposite, and how their comparisons were completely inaccurate. Like, for example, Japan had the flu disappear, right? And people said, it's because everybody wears masks in Japan. That's why it's disappeared. Sweden has the flu disappear and no one's wearing masks.
Yeah, yeah.
So it can't be masks, because these two countries have completely different strategies and different levels of compliance, and the flu disappears in both. And there's no explanation for that, so they just kind of ignore it and move on. But it's really important to hold into account because, yeah, like we said earlier with Fauci, you're not always going to be right, but you got to be right once or twice. And they're never right once or twice. They're always wrong. Those are two great examples of why they get it wrong. Their assumptions, their underlying assumptions for what works and what doesn't, are not based on evidence. They're based off of faith, and it doesn't work.
Hey, everybody, quick message from the Converso app, where I want you to send me a message. More on that in a minute. I think most people who listen to the Tom Woods Show are concerned about privacy. Well, Converso makes those other so-called privacy apps look like the NSA. We're talking state-of-the-art end-to-end encryption, no storage of messages on the server, no user data, optional features like disappearing messages, screenshot protect, and a whole bunch more that they're adding all the time. Drop me a line on Converso with any questions you have or just to say hello. My number there is 555-917-1502. So go to conversoapp.com, get Converso, and drop me a line, 555-917-1502. And it's really me responding. It ain't no bot. You can try and stump me, and I'll prove to you it is really old Woods responding to you. The Converso app is what I use these days, and I hope you'll join me. ConversoApp.com. Now, I don't expect somebody like a Fauci or a Francis Collins or any of those people to say, you know, in retrospect, this bundle of policy recommendations we had did a lot more harm than good, and we won't do this again. I don't expect that. But I wonder about commentators, though, who, by their own admission, have no degrees in any of this. I mean, I'm one of them. You follow this pretty closely, just like I do. Are you seeing any kind of, 3 years later, for heaven's sake, is there any trend at all of people saying, well, we did what we thought was best at the time, but as we look back on it now, maybe we might have done it differently? Is not necessarily saying Fauci should be executed by hanging. I don't mean that. But are they at least, do you see a trend of people saying, if we had to do over again, maybe we should do it differently? Or is everybody just clinging to their opinions?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to that. I think there's a small group of people that are, you know, have big platforms or major media outlets that are writing these kind of like what went wrong articles. But a lot of times when you read them, there's like, yeah, it didn't work as well as we thought it would. But there's still a lot of evidence that masks work. They always kind of say that to justify their place in the kind of progressive hierarchy of people. Like, I don't question the masks work because they work, but yeah, it didn't work as well as we thought it would. You know, it's nice to see, but it doesn't really fully kind of admit the truth. And that's concerning. The other part of it, I think, is that there are some people that are just never going to admit that they were wrong. They can't because it's not politically tenable. You know, a lot of these politicians, they ended these policies very quietly, ended mandates very quietly. There's no like pronouncement of, oh, you know, the reason we're ending this is because everybody can see that we're wrong. What we have seen is that the public has, in a large part, tuned them out. And I think the best way to view that is that they really went after this, the bivalent booster, the new Omicron targeted booster last fall. Everybody's got to get this. It's the only way we can avoid a winter surge. Everybody's got to get the new vaccine. It's targeted to the new strain. And it's like 17% of the public has gotten it. I mean, that is a tremendous failure for them, right? That is incredibly low uptake. And it does show you that even if a lot of the commentary class isn't acknowledging it, or at least kind of hedging their bets, a lot of the people have seen through it. And that's good to see. It would go a long way towards ensuring this never happens again if outlets like The Atlantic and The New York Times were willing to write these articles saying, yeah, none of this worked. It was a, you know, we got this wrong. And here's the evidence showing that we were wrong. I just don't think they're there yet. And I don't know if they ever will be.
I think when Andrew Cuomo announced that the 70% threshold of vaccination in New York had been reached, that now we could reopen, I don't think it's a wild bit of speculation for me to say that that was just an arbitrary benchmark for him to say, okay, because I think there is a sense, you do see some of his statements on Twitter that, look, we cannot be closed forever. We are going to destroy the city if it doesn't reopen at some point. And this is the benchmark that I've held out. So I do think that for him, there was a part of it that was, okay, here's, now we can step away from this thing. And what was interesting was he, of course, had terrified the whole city with his crazy press conferences. And so when he announced this, and when he said that we've, at some point we have to reopen, the people who had followed him up to then did not follow him in that, by and large, at least if the Twitter comment section is any indication. They turned on him like, well, wait a minute, aren't you going to keep us safe? Didn't you say you were going to keep us safe? And so it became a matter of, geez, now I overdid it. Now I can't pull the people back.
Nobody thought about that as a possibility, even though I guess it should have been pretty obvious at the time that if you panic the population, if you terrify them into thinking that they're going to die if they go outside, it's going to be really hard to unwind that. It's a lot easier to scare people than it is to convince them that they're safe. And so it's a good point. I think they kind of created these arbitrary metrics to get themselves out of jail. And then they were stunned to find out that people were still scared. And it's also, I think, once the vaccines rolled out and they were claiming that it was 100% effective, 95% effective, there was no case to continue restrictions in any way, shape, or form. But they kept going with them. And so I think that contributed to a lot of people thinking, are they actually telling me the truth? Is it really safe for me to go outside? Because I still have to wear a mask. I still have to, you know, things are not at 100% capacity, or I still have to stand 6 feet apart in the grocery store. Are they really actually telling me the truth? And so it's all this climate of distrust, deservedly so, that they created themselves. And I think, again, it shows you how poorly thought out this process was, how poorly thought out these measures and mandates were, and how ad hoc it all was, because they really didn't have a plan to get out of it. You know, again, it's a hypothetical, but imagine what would have happened if the vaccine had taken another year or plus to come out, right? Because at the end of 2020, most of the country was still pretty much shut down. They had no plan to get out of it, and it just kind of bailed them out in a way, but they really didn't do a good job of, they weren't able to convince people, you're okay to go back out into society now. And it should have been pretty obvious from the start that that was not going to work.
Do you ever run into people who say, you're obsessing over this, it's years later now, time to move on?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, look, To some extent, I agree. I think a lot of the public has moved on. Thank God. It's overjoyed and thrilled that we have finally moved forward past this, hopefully permanently. But I think it's important to point out that these mistakes, there's a systemic problem here. It's not just about COVID. It's about the fact that people in these positions of power are making decisions based off of poor information. There's no willingness to kind of engage in humility or to question their own belief systems. And, you know, I think a great example, the opposite of that, is someone like Ron DeSantis in Florida, who initially, though he was never strict lockdowns and like Cuomo or Newsom or anything like that, but initially, I think he was a little bit more willing to trust what the experts were saying. And very quickly, because he's an incredibly smart man who listens to people around, you know, smart people around him, got some new information, started looking at the data, started looking at the evidence, and said, this is garbage. They don't know what they're talking about. And he started to immediately unwind the small measures that he had done. That's what you want to see, right? Not everybody's going to be right. But when you get new information that shows that the measures are wrong, you got to start pulling back or change course. And he was willing to do that. That takes a great deal of intelligence and courage and humility. And the fact that experts almost universally are the opposite of that, I think is really damaging, because it's not just about COVID. It's going to be in other policies too and other mandates too. And the danger of allowing them to kind of go on unchecked is like, well, they have the degree. We can't question them. That shouldn't be allowed. I think that's the point of continuing to have these discussions after these mandates have lifted.
Yeah, I think we can't talk about it enough. It's the most horrifying domestic policy of my lifetime. And certainly it ranks among the top in American history. It's an extraordinary moment in American history on many levels. I mean, the mob psychology, the hubris of the public health establishment, there's so much to talk about and to guard against in the future. And we think about a guy like Fauci, who, of course, he made that statement about how he is the science, but he really is, we do have to acknowledge, he really is the public face of the COVID response. There's no doubt about that. And I was looking back at some of my newsletter issues recently that I wrote over the course of these few years, and I had forgotten Fauci saying a couple of things. I've forgotten him saying that Biden's vaccine mandate was actually a moderate plan, according to Fauci, because if it had been up to Fauci himself, he said, for me, it would have just been either you get vaccinated or you're out, whereas the Biden plan did allow for a testing option. So Fauci would have been more totalitarian, he'd let us know. And then secondly, he came right out and said, yeah, I think if you want to get on an airplane, you should have to prove that you're vaccinated. So he was going to try to take air travel away from people. Now, of course, Canada did do that, but then they restored international travel before we did, I think. But so we didn't even get everything that these people were dreaming about imposing on us.
Yeah.
Which is why we can't just sit back and let the narrative ossify into these people saved our lives. There's just no way we can do that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's really important to continue to hammer that point home, because I think people are kind of, they were so tired of the pandemic and the restrictions that they're just happy to kind of be done with it. But that does kind of undersell exactly how bad it was and just how vindictive and totalitarian these measures were, and how dangerous it is that, and I was very surprised by this. I know a lot of people were, how compliant people are. People were just ready and willing to listen to whatever, do whatever they were told, listen to the mandates, set communities apart where you have politicians and local officials and college, university officials mandating vaccines because of what Fauci was saying or what the CDC was saying with no justification. It doesn't have to be justified. It just has to come from the right people. And so that's a really important thing to kind of undermine that credibility, to say all of these people in the positions of authority outsource their thinking to people that didn't deserve it. And so we have to continue to prove why they didn't deserve it, because we're kind of on the back foot, but we have to prove it, and we have to ensure that they don't have this level of trust placed in them ever again going forward, because they don't deserve it. And because they revealed, like you said, how Fauci is wanted to go even further with these kind of authoritarian discriminatory mandates, that shows you what kind of people you're dealing with here. So public health kind of flew under the radar, but the point of this book, point of continuing these conversations, is to say, we never paid attention to the CDC before. They just kind of did their thing and nobody cared. But we have to. We have to pay attention to them, because they are making a difference in people's lives. What they say carries an immense amount of weight, even if it may not necessarily be accurate or evidence-based. And so the point is to kind of hold them to account and point out the flaws in how they launder information to get the outcomes they want through coercion. That's a really dangerous precedent to set.
Well, let's conclude with this. You have the word expertise in your subtitle. We do need expertise, and we rely on it in many fields every single day. When I get on an airplane, I'm relying on the expertise of the people who built that plane, who teach the sciences behind air travel. I'm relying on that implicitly, and I rely on it in ways I'm probably not even aware of every single day. So we do need expertise, but the problem is identifying who really has it. And I think what we've seen is what we might call the weaponization of credentials, where I've got certain letters after my name. And that means, even though there are people who disagree with me, for some reason, because the state has bestowed a certain label on me as being the expert, I get to have my views trump everybody else's. And no matter what evidence you can summon against me or real world examples of what I'm saying not working, it just doesn't matter. I'm the expert, and you just have to sit there and take it.
Right.
Yet, as I say, expertise is absolutely necessary. How do we balance this? How do we figure out how to acknowledge and respect expertise without becoming slaves?
Yeah, it's a really tricky distinction because you're absolutely right. We have to have experts in fields that are able to build airplanes and things like that. But I think the broader point in the collapse of expertise is really, it's the groupthink. It's the lack of questioning. And it's the kind of just like the mentality of that they protect themselves and circle the wagons. Like we saw that with the lab leak theory, right? That's a pretty prominent example where there was a lot of reason to suspect that that could be a significant possibility. And instead of examining the possibility, Fauci and Collins and all these other groups of international community of experts rallied around themselves, have a conference call and say, how do we put down this theory and debunk it as a conspiracy theory, right? That was their first response, not to examine, is this a realistic possibility? Should we be funding gain of function type research in unsafe laboratories in China? It was, we have to protect the scientific community and our group of experts because we could be implicated in the start of this pandemic and jeopardize future funding. That is a dangerous impulse to have. And I think that's the point is like, yeah, you have to have credentialed people that know what they're doing, but they also have to be held accountable. We need to break this theory that like we got to protect our group above protecting the greater good of society and telling the truth. You know, they were more willing to protect themselves than they were to give the public accurate information. That's a dangerous impulse. And that's kind of what I think was the collapse of expertise, but it was this breaking of the veneer that they're just have this universal collective good in mind. They're very selfish people. They're very insular group of people, and just like in a lot of other groups, but they have an immense amount of power, and we need to be much better about making sure that they are held accountable, that they are encouraged to tell the truth, and that outside groups of credentialed people like Dr. Bhattacharya, Dr. Scott Atlas, et cetera, are given the opportunity to criticize them and speak in a public forum without being demonized. So hopefully that's the future. Hopefully all these efforts kind of contribute to that change in mentality going forward.
Well, the very fact that we now have numerous books, including yours, that give a different perspective on all this is very, very important for people living in the future, looking back on this, to understand that there was more than one way of looking at this. So it's going to be hard. There will always be inquisitive people, always. They may not be a majority, but there will always be inquisitive people. And because of books like yours, they will be able to find, those inquisitive people will be able to find the dissident tradition from these critical years in world history. So I strongly, strongly recommend your book. And really, I don't have authors on whose books I don't recommend, because why would I? So I feel like I'm constantly piling on my listening audience with book recommendations, but there are a lot worse things somebody could do to another person than recommend books to them. But I do very much recommend, because it really is relentless and devastating, your book, Illusion of Control, COVID-19 and the Collapse of Expertise. I'm going to have a link up to it on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2329. Very glad to have had a chance to talk to you on the day of release, and I hope people will check it out. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.